This is the New Joy of Gaming podcast. Welcome to the Joy of Gaming podcast, episode 8. I am Rich Lepore, and I am here, as always, with Brandon Brino. Brandon, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad, and I am happy to announce we have some big news. You know what it is, Brandon?
I'm not sure. Did I miss something?
You did not miss anything. In fact, you are part of the news right this minute, and that is we are taking the podcast weekly.
Oh.
Haven't you heard? So what we're going to do to accomplish this goal is try something a little bit different. So just like we've been coming to you every 2 weeks, we bring you the news. Every 2 weeks, we bring you all the latest in like Limited Run and Special Reserve and IM 8-Bit on Brandon's physical picks. Physical gaming corner. Is that what we call it? Mm-hmm. We also talk about Game Pass and PS Plus and Games with Gold on Rich's digital picks. And we also bring you what we've been playing and talk about the different games that we're interested in and going through at the time. We will still be doing that every 2 weeks. However, also every 2 weeks, or every other week, we will be doing a special topic where we dive into something a little bit deeper, something topical, something related to what's been going on in the industry at that time. And it just gives us more time to sort of spread out and talk about sort of special topics that we want to go more in depth about. And on this episode, we are bringing you our Batman in Video Games retrospective. So this isn't going to be every single Batman appearance in every single game, because that would probably be about 19 hours, and it would also be very boring because he's been in a lot of games that are, well, not awesome.
Right.
However, what we are going to do is talk about all the different times Batman has been in video games that we have played or that are like interesting or important or impactful or any of the above. So that's what we're going to dive into and do, Brandon. What do you think about Batman and video games, man?
I like Batman and I like video games, so.
I do like both those things, too. He's definitely my favorite superhero. Is he yours?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then there you go. You couldn't have two more incredibly biased and unfairly.
Who's your second favorite?
Ooh. This is going to sound really lame. I'm going to say Nightwing, dude.
Okay.
It's so cheap. It's such a cheap out. There's a lot of superheroes that I like. I like Green Lantern a lot. I like Catman. I'm just joking.
Catman?
Yeah, dude. Catman.
There's a Catman?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. He was in that book, Secret Six, that Gail Simone wrote. There's even a Lego figure of fucking Catman, dude.
Wow.
Catman is no joke. He's cool looking. He's one of the coolest looking superheroes, but he's certainly not my favorite. How about you? What is your favorite or second favorite comic book character?
I would say, like when I was growing up, my two favorite things were X-Men or Batman and X-Men.
Ooh, X-Men's good.
So I guess if I had to pick one X-Men, I always liked Cyclops growing up, but I feel like I don't really like him that much. I would say Gambit was probably my favorite, Gambit or Wolverine. But Iron Man, I guess, you know, since sort of like the MCU and all that brought him to prominence.
That's probably
my second favorite.
It's almost like Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man. Because like he's so amazing.
Yeah, so I would say Iron Man.
You know who mine was? You reminded me with the X-Men thing. When I was younger, and I had no good reason for this because I wasn't like reading his comics or really into it in that sense. But when I was very young and I saw the animated series, I loved Gambit.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
I just love Gambit.
He was awesome in the cartoon.
I just thought that was an awesome character. And I've always liked, as I'm looking at like lists of superheroes, I've always liked Constantine.
Oh, really?
And I've always liked Rorschach a lot.
Uh-huh.
Rorschach was, so that was how I got into comic books. Yeah.
He's only in one story, but okay.
Well, he's in a bunch of stories now, but.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's got like a bunch of recurring series and shit like that, but yeah.
I like Beast, too.
But if you're only going to be in one story, he's not. But if you were only going to be in one, Watchmen would be it. Mm-hmm. So, did you hear that new recent thing with Alan Moore?
Hated the series. And
right.
I didn't watch that. Was it good?
I didn't watch it either. Everybody says it's amazing.
Except Alan Moore.
To be fair, you know, he's got
some clout. He seems to like hate Hollywood and
He doesn't want anybody touching his shit. Just be, you know, basically what the crux of it was, he was like, you know, people must think that it's some dark, story about segregation in the Deep South. People must think that's what Watchmen is about. And I think that's pretty reductive. Like, no, they think that's what the new Watchmen series is about. But, I mean, at the same time, who am I to say? I don't know what it feels like to have your work taken and twisted into something different, mm-hmm. good or bad. So, I don't know. Alan Moore is a character. How about that?
He sounds like a combination of, like, Christopher Tolkien and like Martin Scorsese, you know, like where they're just like,
dude, did you just come up with that? That was brilliant.
Where they're just like so out of touch, like with, and like I still can't get over Christopher Tolkien's like misplaced like anger, like why he like hates Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, but like is letting this freaking Gollum game exist and thinks what is the Rings of Power so great? I mean, nothing fucking makes sense in that show. So,
I feel the same way from the, you know, little bit of the first episode that I watched. I was like, I don't think I want to watch anymore. This, granted, I'm not a big Lord of the Rings guy, as you know, but a couple of my friends are like, dude, it's great. They were like, you got to get into it. It's amazing. So,
I don't know. Are they fans of?
Oh yeah. Hmm. Oh yeah, they're hardcore fans. I'm skeptical. And they were just like, yeah, they were no, they're really, really big fans. And they were just like, you've got to like, you know, take it for what it is and understand like, you know, that, you know, it's never going to be exactly faithful to the original Tolkien, but it's its own adventure. And, you know, at every turn, they've kind of made smart choices. And yeah, anyway, so it's people have strong opinions about that one way or another, but I was really surprised. A couple people whose opinions that I value were saying that it's really good, because I thought the consensus from like Lord of the Rings fans was like, this is blasphemy. So I was surprised to hear that.
I mean, it's a fine line of like doing an adaptation, but then also like being faithful to, I guess, like sort of like fundamental like events that happen and like, or fundamental like, arcs of a character, or you know, things that happen at certain like on a timeline of events, like so like I get like, yeah, Peter Jackson's adaptation isn't like the total perfection, but I think he did what he had to do to make a compelling film, you know. And whereas like there are things that are going on in this show, like, yeah, I haven't watched all of it, and I'm just like, okay, well, what you're showing right here is literally like contradictory to like what's possible and based on the story. So like, why? Like that's a different sort of blasphemy than just like, hey, we changed this character to fit our show, or we introduced a new original character or whatever,
or we trumped up the action or the violence or the whatever here or what, or, you know, we Hollywoodized it in this way or whatever. But if it's true to the, you know, people that the proof is in the pudding. Lame expression, but true. The Tolkien fans, generally speaking, love the Lord of the Rings trilogy, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That's pretty much...
I mean, there always will be people where the books are better. It's like, yeah, well, the book is
a
500-page thing that has plenty of time to describe
everything. And, you know, there's three of them, and they're complete... they're absolute classics, you know, and they were the culmination of a career. I don't know where they fell in his career, but like they weren't the first thing he ever wrote. You know what I mean? You have to take a very smart person and give them a long time, and they build up to this magnum opus. And, you know, comparing that to any version of it is never going to be, you know.
Yeah. It's a stupid argument anyway. Of course, like in most cases, the books will be better, but it's a totally different medium. Like what works in a book doesn't work in a film. What works in a film doesn't work in a book, you know? So,
yeah. It's definitely interesting. I'll give you a really cool, interesting case in point here while we're off on a weird tangent. So I love British murder mysteries, as you know. There's this book series in England. It's by the guy who did Midsummer Murders. I'm probably losing half the audience right here. But anyway, this guy that did Midsummer Murders, his name is Anthony Horowitz. And he wrote these series, and the first one was called Magpie Murders. And the idea was, he's done so many murder mysteries in the classic way that he was like, I want to deconstruct the genre. How do I move this genre forward? So what he did was, he wrote a story about like a Poirot-like detective, and the first 300 pages of the book is like a mystery novel in like the classical Agatha Christie style. The second half of the book is the writer of that book's editor having to solve a real life murder. And there are clues in that original 300 page book as to the actual what happened in the real life murder. So it's two murder mysteries, one fictional, one real, you know, in the sense of the book, and the two stories blend together. So that's interesting in and of itself, and it's a brilliant book. If you want to check it out, it's got great twists and turns. It's awesome. But here's the other thing. They just started doing the adaptation, running it on PBS Masterpiece. And again, just lost another half of the audience. He said, when we went to make this into a movie, we immediately realized that doing half of the story as with one set of characters and then the other half with the other set was not going to work for a TV show. We had to introduce this editor from the beginning. We had to have the Poirot-like character from the beginning. His name is Atticus Punt. So basically, they interwove the stories the entire time. So as the book editor investigates the real-life murder and we meet the real-life author, we also start to like weave in the story of the fictional book that that author was writing. And it goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. I've heard stories like this time and time again about all the differences you have to make when you're doing an adaptation and all the reasons you have to do that. But that was just a really compelling example of like two stories that happen one after another work great literarily. But when you made a show, like, it just didn't work. Like, imagine you're watching a show and halfway through the entire cast changes. Yeah. It just wouldn't work, you know? So, anyway, case in point. Also, really good recommendation. Check out Magpie Murders.
What about, quick tangent here.
Yeah.
Angela Lansbury recently passed away. Did that
hit?
Oh,
I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't know that? Does that hit hard? Were you a Murder, She Wrote fan?
No.
I feel like there was a good chance you would have been.
Isn't that weird? No, maybe. I was just never exposed to it. I like the British stuff, and I think Angela Lansbury is kind of like inspired by that British stuff, the Murder, She Wrote thing. I should check it out, to be honest, but for some reason, when things are old and look old...
But it wasn't... I was just looking 80s. Up when it was 84 to 96.
Yeah. So. But when things like even... like, but you know, the picture ratio is a square again, and it's just... And it looks like older film grade, and you know, we're spoiled, right? So... when I go back and I watch like American shows from the 80s and early 90s, I don't have as much tolerance for those as I do for British shows from the 80s and early 90s. For some reason, I feel like those are like less corny, more serious, more built, more based on a literary background. I don't know.
Well,
anyway,
Angela Lansbury is British. So I know. Maybe that's the crossover you need.
I've never watched Murder, She Wrote. It's a huge gap in my... in my
I remember always seeing that. I think in the intro, like it would like come on after like a show I was watching.
Yeah.
And I remember in the intro, she's like jogging or something like through the town that she's in. And like, I guess all sorts of like crazy stuff would happen in the town, like people dying and whatever. But like, I remember just like dreading when that would happen because it was like, I was hoping there would be another episode of whatever that was. Uh-huh. And this freaking Murder, She Wrote comes on and I'm like so pissed off.
I wish I knew what it was that led into Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, I don't it was probably something on Nick at Night or something that I was watching.
You were probably watching Golden Girls, right?
Sure. I was probably watching like I Love Lucy and then like, or Three's Company.
Okay.
And like, then
all right, Murder, or Three She Stooges. Can you believe that there was literally a TV show where all they would do is go around and slap each other in the face, and they actually had a move that was called the poik? Right. You know this? And it's your two fingers, and you stick it in their eyes, and you go, poik!
And then you go...
And then the guy goes... I mean, people watch that shit still, dude.
I don't think it's bad, but okay.
Do you watch Three Stooges?
No, I mean, I don't... I've watched it, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I never gave it a chance. I just saw the poik thing and the... just like, this is so ridiculous.
Well, it comes out of vaudeville, I guess.
Not
right?
that like, I'm a slapstick fan. And to be honest, like I'm not like a Charlie Chaplin nut either. So maybe that's just not my
Marx
thing.
Marx Brothers.
Yeah. It's just not my thing. So.
What about Abbott and Costello?
I mean, same thing. Who's on Laurel first? And Hardy. Who's on first? No, he's on second. You know. Anyway, I was a really bad version of Abbott.
No,
Costello.
He's on second.
Yeah. It's actually, no, what's on second? What? Who?
I don't know. It's on third.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I think that is it. Yeah, you got it. Okay. Well, with that auspicious beginning, let us dive into the world of Batman. First, let's start by talking about why we love Batman so much. Okay. So I love Batman because I like the world. I love Gotham. I love this idea of being, you know, who doesn't love the idea of like having sort of this beautiful house and money? I mean, granted, he's an orphan and that part of it sucks, but like having Alfred and it's so cozy in there and you got this house and you just spend your life sort of like building up these skills and building technology. And then like you become this ultimate detective. And I love detective stories. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, Detective Comics is where Batman comes from. It was his book. And I just love the world. I love the way it makes me feel. I love the rogues gallery. I love the depth of the stories. But most of all, it's the mood and I think the character and that's really what makes those stories work. And then I think also a big part of the success of Batman is how many others like us love Batman and therefore do their best work when writing a Batman book or making a Batman film or whatever. So if you think about like the Nolan trilogy or you think about like Scott Snyder's amazing run and so many other people's Tom King's amazing run more recently and all these different creatives that have done awesome things with Batman.
Or even Alan Moore.
All these that have done these amazing things with Batman and the Batman mythos. So I think it's partly the character and how amazing it is, and then the fact that such an amazing character draws in that amazing creative talent. But I just love the world.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's... I just love... Like, I always gravitate towards... like the superhero characters that are like the smart guys. So, I mean, the fact yeah. that he, you know, the high intelligence, the world's greatest detective, like the detective aspect of it, like the Long Halloween's probably like my favorite Batman story, so you know, good. Which is a very much like a big mystery, right? A big murder mystery that he's trying to solve. Love like just the dark aspect of it. Like, the fact that he's, like on the side of justice, but also like he is very much fueled by vengeance and like fear, like trying to like intimidate and like instill fear in his enemies. I really like that aspect of him, like where he's like, I'm not gonna kill you, but I might like break every bone in your body, you know, if you're a criminal. And undeniably has the best rogues gallery and villains in all of comics. Only Spider-Man can even come close to him.
The case has been made many times, too, that like Batman and his villains are inextricable and that one leads to the other, which leads to the other. And it's like, who's on first? No, I was joking. But it is like who came first, the chicken or the egg here? Did these rogues appear because there was a Batman and they had to sort of revolt against the Batman, or did Batman come up as like a response to the villains, you know, and that whole yeah. interesting dynamic. And then, you know, so many of the Joker stories are about, you know, is one of us who we are without the other.
Right. That they essentially like need each other, right? Like that Batman needs somebody like the Joker because he can't live his life. Like he has no life other than like doing this, right, perpetually. And then the Joker is not really interested in like material. He's just interested in chaos, right? And all he wants to do is make Batman, you know, break his rules or his ideals, right? That's his goal, just to like break him as a person. So yeah, I mean, there's no one quite like the Joker, and I love all like the Bat family. I love Batgirl.
Nightwing.
Love Nightwing, you know, so.
There's just something magic about those characters, and even aesthetically, they rock. Like, they're just so well-designed. Cool.
Love Catwoman as well.
Oh, dude, Catwoman's so good. Every time you mention, when you say that the Rogues Gallery is second to none, it gets an immediate nod and agreement, but when you start rattling off the names, like Catman, I mean, he's so iconic. Just kidding. Man-Bat's pretty iconic, but not my favorite. But.
I mean, I like Catwoman as sort of like the anti-hero ally of Batman, more so than like the villain. Like, you know, I never really...
Yeah.
I mean, she was, I guess...
She's got a heart.
Up until the 90s, but then like she became more of like even like part of the Bat family, I guess, in a way, right?
She's got a heart, you yeah. know. He's always able to touch something in her that like, you know, some sort of sympathy or empathy or something,
like, or he's like the only person that like believes, you know, in her,
that she's good,
yeah,
and that she's, yeah, exactly, she's like, I'm bad, you don't know it, and he's like, no, I know you're not. And anyway, so there's a lot to that. So For us, I'm trying to think what my first Batman stuff was. I think it probably was animated series.
Mm-hmm.
Does that predate that Batman video game that we'll be talking about, the 89?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
No, probably it came after it.
Yeah, well. It did yeah. come after it, yeah.
Because I think the animated series was like, you know, 94 maybe. I mean, so maybe like 92-ish.
Yeah, Maybe what it is that like he's just in the zeitgeist. Maybe it wasn't actually like definitively formal media that got us into Batman.
Yeah,
the first
92.
Time. And so if the original Batman video game was 89,
92 to 95.
So then that means that like we must have been like, you know, like whenever I bought like a tent for my bed, there'd be like a Batman print on it, or like my pajamas were Batman.
Well, I guess like the Tim Burton thing was big.
Oh, that was
89.
Yeah. So I saw that actually, I think in theaters, even though I would have been really young at that point. Maybe I saw it. Maybe.
Yeah, video. I remember watching, you know, on Fox Kids, it would be Batman the Animated Series. Like, this is where my love of it came. Like, it would be Batman the Animated Series. Then I think at some point, the Superman Animated Series came after that. But then, like, it would be, like, Spider-Man. The Fox had Spider-Man. There'd be the real Ghostbusters. I loved the Ghostbusters when I was kids, like, with Slimer and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The 90s X-Men cartoon, like all back to back, like, yeah. So those were like, I watched those every Saturday.
That stuff was amazing. It would be, imagine that it was like worth getting up early on a Saturday, because that's how good that shit was. And you weren't taping it generally. I mean, I wasn't setting my VCR at least at that point. So, so anyway, that kind of leads us into talking about the video games of Batman for this particular conversation. And there are quite a few, but as we were sort of doing our research for this episode, there are some early ones that we remember and that were significant, and then there's a really big gap, and then the Batman video games got awesome,
right?
Like, and again, that kind of happened with, you know, the Lego Batman games and with the Arkham series and some other ones that we'll talk about. But I guess the earliest one that either of us really remember is Batman the video game. I misspoke earlier. It was 1990, right?
Right.
And that was on NES, Sunsoft.
But based on 89 Batman, right? I guess, like, that's what inspired it.
Right. Although I don't think it was...
It's not, like, really has anything to do with
it. So what was that game like? What was the mechanics?
Yeah, so I still have that game. I mean, had some rockin' music. It was by Sunsoft, so, you know, they were a big developer during that time.
They did Blaster Master, didn't they?
Yep, Blaster Master. And Batman was all purpley. He was purpley in color, I guess, maybe because he wouldn't hold great against, like, the one color palette of the NES. So,
right.
So he was purple. And then you would get, it was super hard. Super hard.
Like
game.
Everything was back then.
And yeah, you would get, like, you pick up projectiles and you would have a certain amount of batarangs you could do and take out guys. I remember facing against, like, Firefly. I think he was in there. That's, like, probably as far as I could ever get. He kicked my ass. But I never beat that game. Never even came close.
Yeah.
But I think you fight the Joker at the end, and it's really hard, too.
Yeah, it's like you don't win. I mean, that's just, like, a given. You just don't win.
Yeah, I mean, but all games were like that, right? They were meant to, like, you just play over and over. But the first level music is awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. It's one of the classics of that NES era, for sure.
Yeah.
And then in 91, the sequel, Return of the Joker.
Yeah, so I didn't play this one as much, but also by Sunsoft, it wasn't as good.
Yeah.
Not really remembered in the same light as the first one.
And then based off of Batman and the Animated Series, we jump forward to 94 and 95 with The Adventures of Batman and Robin. Again, this is one I didn't play, but you did, right?
Yeah, I love this game. I grew up with the Genesis one. That's the one I had. The Genesis one, and it was kind of like a lot of games back then were like the one on the Super Nintendo and the one on the Genesis, even though they're the same game. They would be, like, developed by different people and be, like, totally different. So the one on the Genesis plays a lot like Gunstar's Heroes or something. It's like a run-and-gun type of game where you're just shooting and you have all sorts of projectiles and stuff like batarangs and stuff. And it was a two-player game if you wanted with Batman and Robin. And it very much evokes the art style of the animated series, and really, really fun game. And I think the SNES one, which I also haven't played as much of it, but I think that was more of like a beat 'em up kind of game, like a side scrolling beat 'em up. Wasn't like on the same sort of run and gun style as the Genesis one, but both are really cool games.
And then there's a long period where there was a lot of like licensed tie-in games that happened. There was one for Batman Forever, Batman Forever the arcade game. There was a Batman Beyond game, Return of the Joker, Batman Gotham City Racer on PlayStation. Batman Dark Tomorrow.
There's like a Batman Returns one, right?
And I'm just trying to think of Batman Rise of Sin Tzu was one that I heard a lot of people talk about, but I never played. It was on Xbox and PS2. They also had a version for Game Boy Advance and Game. You remember that era when when like there'd be a game for all the consoles, but they were like different games.
Yeah.
And it was
like the Game Boy Advance version would be like some totally different,
Different game, different developer, maybe not even the same characters. It was completely different. There was a game that got like a little notoriety, Batman Begins, on Game Boy Advance, GameCube, and PlayStation 2. I remember hearing about that, but it wasn't very good. It wasn't something that we had played. And then that brings us forward to the Justice League Heroes, which is not a Batman game, but I did want to mention it. It was a game on Xbox and PlayStation. This is the era. See, there was this whole era of games. That era we just skipped over. Marvel had some great games in that era. So they had like those Legends games, the X-Men Legends games.
X-Men Legends, Marvel Ultimate, which I guess came after Marvel Ultimate Alliance. They had some pretty decent Spider-Man games, right? Like Spider-Man 2, even though it was a movie tie-in, was considered great, like where it was actually an open world where you were swinging around and stuff.
So there were a lot of cool games that they put out. And DC, they tried to sort of match, you know, the Marvel Ultimate Alliance game. So they put this thing out called Justice League Heroes, and it wasn't just Batman. There was like eight different heroes. Batman was one of the first selectable heroes that you could play, but it was essentially like that isometric top-down brawler type game. It was either single player or two player, and you would sort of walk through, and you had special abilities and regular attacks, and sort of fought through the levels. That's just one that I remember playing.
Was it RPG-ish? Kind of like?
Okay. It had, but not as much. It was more level based, but it definitely had some of that to it. And then we get to Lego Batman, and that was sort of the first of kind of the real glut of Batman games, and they started getting good. Granted, Lego games are their own beast, but there was Lego, and we're gonna sort of jump, I guess, out of time order.
You
at
could
this
talk
point.
About them collectively, I guess, since they all sort of have their own.
So there was Lego Batman the video game, which was in 2008. That was one of the earlier Lego Batman games, so it's a little more rudimentary at this point. But it was all about like suits that you would
get.
Was
this the first of like the Lego? What was like? Or with Star Wars, like, you know, like the New Age Lego games.
Age Lego games, the very first one was Star Wars, and the very first Lego Star Wars was the prequel trilogy, weirdly. Okay. And then Lego Star Wars, the original saga came out, which Lego Star Wars 2.
And then was it Batman after that, or?
I don't know the exact chronology there, but it was soon after that the Batman game came out, Lego Batman. It was different because, whereas a lot of the other games, like Star Wars, if you needed different abilities, you had to switch to additional characters that had those abilities. Like, if you needed a lightsaber for something, you had to go to a Force user with a lightsaber. If you needed a gun with, like, a grapple, you needed to go to, like, one of the soldier classes. But in Lego Batman, it was you and Robin, and you actually had suits you would acquire throughout the levels, and you could switch, like, Batman scuba suit, Batman fire suit, whatever it might be, and you actually solved the levels that way. So it was, like, a neat little wrinkle. Later on, as the Lego games evolved, a more modern Lego game, because they made a lot of ground in the years between 2008 and 2012 when Lego Batman 2 DC Super Heroes came out. And it just demonstrates sort of the dominance of Batman as, like, DC and Batman are almost sort of synonymous. Like, if you look at, like, Lego, the toys, so many of the Lego sets that are DC are just Batman. The original, the very first licensed superhero Legos were Lego Batman. And then later it became Lego DC Superheroes, and then there was Lego Marvel Superheroes. But Lego Batman, just Batman in general, is just... he's such a big, ubiquitous, famous, big character that he sort of took precedence. So even when in 2012 they came out with Lego Batman 2 DC Superheroes, really it was a DC Superheroes game, but they called it Lego Batman.
Right, because they had that name.
Exactly. So that one sort of expanded beyond the original scope of just sort of Batman, Robin, and his team in Rogues Gallery. Then in 2014 there was Lego Batman 3, and this is getting much closer to the modern era, really modern era of the Lego games. This one was beyond Gotham. This took it. If Lego Batman 2 took it beyond Batman, but still like very much on Earth, beyond Gotham took it to outer space.
Oh, really?
So yeah, you started to have like Brainiac as the antagonist. You had the Lanterns were in it in a big way, and it was just a big sort of cosmic, explosive, propulsive adventure. It was a really good game, though. They all were. And there's a lot of great Lego games in between there. If we ever talk about Lego games, that'd be another episode. Another game, this is sort of an honorable mention, but Lego Dimensions in 2015. Coming off of the success of the Lego movie, There were essentially three characters that led the LEGO Dimensions team, which was Gandalf, LEGO Batman, and Wildstyle, who was the main protagonist of the LEGO movie, or the co-protagonist of the LEGO movie, along with Owen. Is that his name, Owen? No. I forget the main character.
Chris Pratt's character.
Yeah, I'm thinking Owen because Owen Grady, but it's not Owen. It's something else. But anyway.
And this was like LEGO's
yes.
answer to like Skylanders and Disney. What was the Disney one called?
Oh, God, I used to know. Infinity.
Disney Infinity,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so those Toys to Life games. And so this was their version, but it was way fucking better because you actually got to build like this.
Well, LEGO. You love Legos.
I do love Lego. But it was this Lego portal, and like you built it. And then like when you would buy like the add-on packs with the extra characters and the extra levels, you would actually have like Lego sets to build, and then they would have like a barcode on them that scanned them into the game. And so what it did was it did two things. One, it gave you this awesome ability to like enjoy building Legos for lapsed Lego builders like me, who at the time wasn't buying Lego. It was a kid thing, right? And I was like, I don't buy Legos anymore, but I love them, but I don't buy them anymore. So it gave me an opportunity to re-dip my toe in that. And it did this for a lot of people my age and my generation. Now we're just unabashed and we just buy Legos again. But it's something that happened during the pandemic. Adult Lego went through the roof. But that's a story for another day. But LEGO Dimensions was fun because it did that. But also, unlike Spyro, and somewhat unlike Disney was a little more like this, LEGO Dimensions brought in all kinds of franchises. So the sets would be themed after Ghostbusters, and the sets would be themed after Knight Rider, and Doctor Who, and Portal 2, and all these amazing cool concepts that would get brought in that you never thought you'd get in like a LEGO video game that weren't big enough. Like Knight Rider's not big enough for a LEGO game, but you can have a LEGO level, and you can have a LEGO character, right? And so there was Jurassic World, and there was all these different things. Anyway, Batman
wasn't there like Back to the Future maybe or something?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So Batman was a big part of that. He was one of the main three protagonists that you brought in that came with the set when you bought the portal. So that was another experience with Batman in video games, pretty significant. And then finally in the LEGO world, LEGO DC Supervillains. This one is a little bit different yet again. It's one of the newest LEGO games that have come out. It's the Rogues Gallery. It's essentially, they say DC Supervillains, but it's like the Joker and Harley Quinn game, really. And then when you start that one, the big sort of extra piece to it is that you get to create a character. You create your own villain. And so mine's like a guy with a monocle who has like ice powers and shit. And you can make it look however you want. Mine looks like a British dude that fucks you up. But it's fun. And definitely like very much like kind of a Batman adjacent story, but not technically Batman. So that's it for the LEGO.
And then we got a movie. So do you think the movie would have happened if not for these, you know what I mean? Because it's like, it's sort of like,
oh, the LEGO Batman movie.
Yeah, the LEGO Batman movie, obviously like LEGO Batman themed LEGO is not like unique to the game, but like the game obviously like gave that
I think the LEGO movie is what started it, right?
Sure.
So the LEGO movie, which I you know is whatever, but that movie Batman was like if it was getting Oscars, he would have been a supporting actor. Right. And he was one of the team that teams up to go get the Kraggle or whatever. And so when they decided to make the LEGO Batman movie, it was because of the success of that character in there. But would Batman have even been a supporting character in the original LEGO movie if not for all these video games and if not for the LEGO Batman sets that were being built in real life? Probably not. They would just wouldn't have chosen him. It would have been, you know, whatever, from other franchises. So it all kind of built on itself. Yeah. But I think if the LEGO movie hadn't come out and Batman hadn't been so loved, Will Arnett voiced him.
Right, yeah.
And if he hadn't been such a beloved, like, he's like a total egotist and, like, he's just like, I'm Batman. You know, and that's his thing, right? It's a very reductive look at Batman. I even feel like a jackass calling it reductive, but it kind of is. And the success of that character and that voice really led to everything that came after, I think.
Okay.
So. Anyway, did you watch or did you play any of these LEGO Batman games?
Nope, haven't played any.
Zero?
Nope.
Are you not a LEGO game guy at all?
I've never played a LEGO game.
Come on.
Never. I mean, I played maybe like a demo or something of it once.
Wow, really?
Like maybe the...
That surprises me. I thought it was mandatory, man. Okay. I really did. I thought it was like core. Okay. Kind of. Were you a LEGO guy when you were a kid, like with real LEGOs?
I mean, I had them. I was never like super into it or anything.
What was your favorite toy?
My favorite toy?
Line.
Oh.
G.I. Joe, Ninja Turtles.
I guess Ninja Turtles and like Ghostbusters and stuff. That, those are my two favorite. Yeah.
Did you ever have the Ghostbusters base?
Yeah, the firehouse. I had that. Yeah.
I didn't have it. It was expensive. I didn't have it. That was cool though.
And the Ecto one I had as well.
Oh man, that's really cool. I have a Lego Ecto one to build at home, but I'm not a kid anymore, so go figure. And then a couple of others that I guess are worth bringing up before we get to some of the, well, what do you think? I guess we'll talk. It's hard to figure out what order you want to do here.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Well, I mean, should we? So the Lego Batman is 2008, and honestly, Arkham. Well, so is let's do this. Let's go Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe next.
Okay.
Because that's 2008 as well. So where we started with Lego Batman, we went up to the present day. But we're gonna go back in time, back to when the original Lego Batman came out. At that same time, Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe was coming out. Talk about that one a little bit.
Yeah, so that was an interesting one because essentially it's a fighting game crossover between Mortal Kombat and DC, which was pretty controversial all the time because obviously Mortal Kombat is very hyper violent. And then you're sort of combining that with superheroes are supposed to be, you know, or for the most part, superheroes that are supposed to be like good heroes, right, aren't ripping spines out of people. So I remember like the fatalities or whatever they call them, and those are very tame.
Yeah,
right.
It was like he would do like a big brutal uppercut and you go flying or something, right?
So it was kind of interesting matchup. Obviously comes out of like how like we would have like the X-Men cross Street Fighter and like Marvel heroes versus Street Fighter and stuff like that eventually more, you know, became Marvel versus Capcom, you know, so Marvel was doing their crossover thing, which obviously fit with Street Fighter and Capcom fighters a lot better. But then, you know, we had something that came out of nowhere where Mortal Kombat versus DC and obviously Batman, you know, being involved in that where the two universes crossover. You know, there's some story reasons or whatever, but kind of an interesting thing in history. It was a decent game.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that era. I think it was only like MA-13 or whatever they call that. I think it wasn't like
teen
R
or something.
Yeah, it was teen. Yeah, T for teen.
But then obviously that would be the groundwork for what would come after that,
which was the Injustice and Injustice 2, right? So yeah. I guess go that route.
Yeah. So Injustice and was it a comic book first or did the comic book come
after,
from this? Right.
After.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it got to be big. People loved it.
Right. So this is the idea. So obviously NetherRealm made this too. So now, you know, it has nothing to do with Mortal Kombat. It's just the DC universe.
So wait, real quick. So chronology wise, there was Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe. Looking at NetherRealm for a second, what did they make in between there? Do you remember?
They probably would have made Mortal Kombat, the reboot, like Mortal Kombat 8 or whatever it was, or whatever the one where that like people were like, Mortal Kombat's back. You know,
I remember that. And then it would have been probably Injustice next. I think so. They did alternate like that at that point.
Yeah, because then there would have been like Mortal Kombat 10 or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's exactly right. So anyway, so it would have been Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe, then like the return of Mortal Kombat. Then they come back with something that was really surprising to a lot of people. And this game was a smash hit. Mm-hmm. And it had legs. Like I heard Injustice Gods Among Us, the first one, was like, I mean, I heard about that game for years. They were bringing out DLC characters. I went to a trip to like a log cabin and a bunch of buddies of mine were there. And it was like the entire weekend, all anybody wanted to do was play that game, unlock characters, and like fight.
Yeah, and then like they just like did the animated DC movie of Injustice, right? Like so Injustice like
it became its own sub universe.
Even the Snyder Justice League movies, right, like had a little bit of that like what would happen, right, if Superman went bad, like kind of like tones of Injustice in there, like the nightmares Bruce is having or whatever, like seeing Superman being evil or whatever. So I mean, interesting story. I think it's one that great Superman fans, like if you love Superman, you probably don't love Injustice. Mm-hmm. Because once again they turn Superman into a bad guy. If you're a Batman fan, you probably like it more because he's on the side of good, right? What's your feeling on it? It's a cool concept for sure.
Yeah, I dig it. I mean, there are people that love that universe and like bought the comics. I think there were a couple of them that came out, like one volume one and volume two, and then obviously the sequel game came out later. But I liked it fine. I liked watching it better though and reading about it better because I just don't like fighting games.
Yeah, I don't love fighting games just because I'm typically not very good at them. There's a couple franchises I gravitate to. Like I like Street Fighter. Like I'll always like check out the new Street Fighter, even though I'm not going to like delve, hugely into it.
I mean, and for me, that was Mortal Kombat for a while, but at a certain point, it became more complex than I was willing to invest the time.
Yeah, so
and Killer Instinct were mine.
I love Street Fighter. I love Marvel vs. Capcom. And I love Soul Calibur as
well. Oh, I like Soul Calibur, too. The original.
And yeah, I like Mortal Kombat as well. But Injustice is cool. Like I've said before, like, if you sort of take a license I really care about and, like, put it in like a genre that maybe I don't normally gravitate to, it's a way to get me in, right? Because I want to play through the story and just like see what's going on. Like, it, you know, it's a cool story. See like where are the characters, who they're allying with, who, what sides they're taking, what the story is, you know, I like that. And Injustice 2 was kind of like a follow-up on that. And then it added sort of like this sort of like loot system on top of it, where like there was like, you would gain like pieces of costumes and like abilities and like, you know, that played into like the online component. Like when you were fighting online, so
nice. And then, did you play 2?
Yeah, that's what I was just talking about.
Oh, sorry, I'm sorry. Okay,
yeah,
cool. All right, so we got those out of the way. So let's take another trip back just slightly to the Telltale Batman games, which I loved. I played the first one of these. The second one I started and I didn't finish.
I played both of them.
Okay. But I love the first one a ton. I think it's maybe top 3 Telltale games for me personally. The thing I love about it, I've mentioned this on other podcasts a couple times, and Brandon and I disagree a little on this, I believe, but it took some really big swings in terms of being different. Like I said, in Gotham Knights, which we'll talk about in a second a little bit, but in Gotham Knights, one of the interesting parts is, you know, you're with all these new Knight characters and you're wondering, like, who? I wonder what Jason Todd's backstory is in this version. Or, like, you know from the beginning that Gordon's dead, but you don't know how, right? So it's like, I wonder what happened to Gordon. I wonder what the circumstances
were. Yeah, how does it affect Barbara or whatever.
Exactly, and all these different implications. And so this game was awesome because they somehow got permission to just, like, make good guys bad guys and bad guys good guys.
And this Barbara, like, the killing joke never happens, I guess, in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's never paralyzed.
It doesn't seem that way.
Yeah,
she alludes to having in Gotham Knights. She alludes to having been Oracle, but right. She doesn't allude to like.
But
ever
I wonder
being
if that does imply that she was handicapped if she was Oracle.
Yeah, I don't know. It could have just been that she was just a computer genius because she is in this.
Yeah,
and maybe it just was sitting in a chair being a computer genius, not because she had to.
Hmm.
But it does seem a little weird. Like, why would she take her agency away and not be out fighting? I don't know. Maybe that is part of it. Maybe there was, like, in Yael Simone's run, this miraculous recovery that people got pissed about for good reason. But anyway. But there were characters in the Telltale Batman that, like, you just had no idea where it was going. I thought I had a great mystery. It was like I was a detective. There were characters that were my friends, like, from childhood, and you didn't know if they were good or bad. You had some theories. The Joker was really unique in it.
Mm-hmm.
I dug it. I even liked some of the like QTE segments when you'd be like making decisions, like physicality decisions. Something that was a little different than a lot of the other Telltale games, or at least heightened in this, where like you'd be in a combat scenario and you'd have to like, do you throw your batarang and smash that light to like kill the lights, or do you want to like take your grapple and like pull over that podium or that pillar? So that like the ceiling falls down, and but you don't know what the implications are going to be of each. So you make the decision and you roll the dice, and that's what Telltale games do really well at their best. And I thought those games did that really well. I know you were more mixed, right?
Yeah, I'm like, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I think if anything, like it's good that like it shouldn't just be the same story over and over and over again. So yeah, it's good like when they do something a little unexpected and changed, you know, the things we like. I thought that was done really well in like Insomniac Spider-Man, like just shifting things that we knew about characters just a little bit. But in this game, I mean, I like some of it, like his relationship with like Penguin and like I guess the Joker one is kind of interesting. It also almost feels a little bit like the Joaquin Phoenix Joker in a way before that even ever happened, right? Like
interesting.
I didn't really like some of the backstory around like Bruce Wayne's dad, for example. Like, I kind of hated that angle that they took. I know some people might like how radically that changes, but I kind of hated it.
Yeah.
I also just, like, I feel like Batman was just getting his ass kicked the whole game. Like, that's the one with Lady Arkham or whatever. Yeah. Like, he's just getting his ass handed to him. I'm like, how many times is this guy going to get beat up?
It's not,
it's Batman. He's the best fighter in the world. And he's just, yeah. But other than that, I mean, it is cool. It's a decent take, like, on, like, for Telltale to tackle Batman. Yeah, so I don't necessarily, like, I don't think it's, like, in my top three, but it's one of the better ones that they've done, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, you know what's in my bottom three? Guardians.
Yeah.
I only got through the first episode, so I don't
know. Game of Thrones is also pretty weak. Ooh. And yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's definitely Walking Dead, Tales from the Borderlands, yeah. Wolf Among Us.
Yeah, Wolf Among Us my favorite, but Walking Dead second, probably. Cool. So that brings us to the ultimate Batman game, Arkham Asylum. So
the whole Arkham series, yeah.
Right, but Arkham Asylum in 2009. So when this game came out, we started seeing previews of it, and everyone was starting to be like, wait a minute, is this going to be good?
Yeah, because superhero games were not a guarantee. Like, and even that was even the time where superhero movies
were bad. Yeah,
like, I mean, other than
there was Spider-Man, which some people liked, some didn't.
And then
there was the Batman,
Nolan trilogy, right? I guess was like when it established itself.
Yeah,
I guess the X-Men movies were okay. Like,
yeah, but three made everybody hate them again.
Yeah, I remember how.
Oh, and like, then there was Wolverine versus X-Men or whatever it was called, Wolverine Origins.
X-Men Origin. That was pretty bad.
That was pretty bad. But some people enjoy watching it anyway. Remember Deadpool?
It's funny, like, looking like back at how low budget the first X-Men was. Like,
I enjoy it though.
No, but
I
mean, like, you didn't know it back then, but if you watch it now, you're like, damn, they had like no budget on this film.
It was the complete opposite. It was a huge risk as opposed to the least risky thing you can do, which it is now.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like, I mean, we've named like a couple ones. Like I said, like, there were a couple good Spider-Man movie games there. I think probably Marvel Ultimate Alliance would have been before this, right? So, you know, like, those were X-Men Legends. They were cool, but none of them were, like, huge blockbuster.
And then Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2 wasn't as good again. And it just... And like I said, we skipped over that big section of Batman games that were just so below average. You know, they were just, like, some of them were maybe a 6 or a 7, maybe. Most of them were 5s, and they were just, like, cash-ins. And people would buy them, and sometimes people would try to like
so
them.
So many were, like, movie licenses and tie-ins. And
yeah, and you know, and they were all right. But they're really, up to that point, there certainly wasn't an amazing Batman game. There certainly wasn't...
I don't think there was an amazing superhero game, period, right?
Yeah, there definitely wasn't a superhero game. I mean, Spider-Man 2, a lot of people talk about. But that's not... I mean, there certainly was not a game that could win Game of the Year that was a superhero game. Same way, there was no movie that could be the biggest movie of the world that was superhero. It just wasn't like that back then. And so, like, we're living in the era of the superhero now. But back then, even now, it's hard to make a good superhero game. But somehow... Rocksteady Studios, which was unknown before this game.
They only done a couple things, right? They were under Eidos. Like, they were frequently collaborated with Eidos. I think they made that... what is that game called? Like, it... I'll find it. The game that they did before this. I'll find it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But, you know... Everybody was starting to get, like... We were seeing previews, and we're watching Batman walk... And we're seeing his cape.
Urban Chaos. That was the one I was thinking. Remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the one they did right before this.
Well, anyway.
It was like you were like a SWAT team.
It certainly wouldn't. I thought it was actually not terrible.
No, it was decent.
But it certainly wasn't going to tell you what was coming next. Mm-hmm. And so this game, like, one of the things that I think I remember hearing about it early, I don't know why I remember this, but was that, like, it's over one night and his cape will, like, deteriorate, and his suit will get patches and holes in it throughout the night. And that attention to detail had boded really well for the experience. But when this game landed in my Xbox 360 and I started playing it, I just couldn't believe it. It's so good. The Arkham series in general is so good. Personally, my favorite is Arkham Asylum, at least from my initial playthroughs. I haven't done, like, a replay of the whole thing to tell you if City takes the crown now, in terms of what I love about games now. But the first time I played each of the three games, the main three games by Rocksteady, that first game, Arkham Asylum, first of all, it had the benefit of being the first amazing new, I mean, it completely reinvented the genre. It had so many cool elements that, like the Riddler trophies, every level. So it brought in Metroidvania elements. You know what I mean? So it was a third-person action game where your character had this amazing combat. It had stealth predator segments. It had unbelievable puzzle exploration mechanics. It had Metroidvania elements where you couldn't go into certain areas, but then you would unlock new abilities and new gadgets, which would allow you to go through those areas. And they did it in an organic way where, like, your Batmobile would, like, pull up and you'd grab a gadget out of the trunk, or they would, like, drop a gadget down for you or whatever it was. Yeah,
like Alfred would, like, do a drop with, like, the bat plane or whatever they call it.
And you'd organically get these new abilities that would let you do new things. And it's just remarkable how good that game is. And I just think, like, as an expression of, like, Batman, and that whole game is, like, Batman versus the Joker. And yes, and there's probably 35 references to other villains. There's other villains you fight.
It's like a funhouse of Batman history and lore and everything, like a love letter to it. Like, it's packed, like, it's so densely packed, like every square inch of the game, like, has something interesting to see it or some reference.
I love to talk about Calendar Man because, like, at a certain point, do you actually meet him or do you just walk in and see?
I think you just see, like, all the
in the next games, I think you meet him, but in this game, you walk into his, like, cell, and I think you pick up a clue in there, and then you look, and there's, like, all of the, you know, information, Calendar Man stuff, and some of them were discreet, and you couldn't figure out what it was, but then the game was brilliant, because the Riddler challenges, part of them was, like, picking up Riddler trophies. Part of them allowed you to really take close looks at your environment, because you had, like, a bat camera or whatever, and you would turn on your, like, AR vision. And then you would have to look, you'd have to piece together, like, perspective visual puzzles.
Like get the perfect shot of, like, what the clue was talking about. Like,
there'd be a question mark. And it'd be on, like, one pillar had, like, the dot for the question mark. A window had the other part. So you have to look through the window and then get the right angle on the pillar. And then you'd see the question mark perfectly. And you had to take a picture, and then the Riddler trophy would pop.
And there were other things, like just things in the environment that you had to, like, look at and, like, trigger, and that would pop the
and there were riddles. Yeah. So every time you went into a new area, this is why it was so densely packed with cool shit. So every time you go into a new area, you'd see a riddle, like, you know, counting down the days, Batman's enemy waits. I wonder when it'll be July 1st. Ha, ha, ha. And then, like, you have to go to Calendar Man's cell and take a picture of Calendar Man's calendar, right, or whatever. And there were so many of those, and then there were, like, little, like, rattling Joker teeth, and you had to knock those out. So even the collectibles were fun as shit, because it was like you'd throw your Batarang and it would go and it would satisfyingly break. Every detail of that game is perfection. And, you know, we're nowhere near novel talking about this. There's a million videos about it. There's a million articles about why it was so great. But it's just important to emphasize, like, the context of, like, there just hadn't been superhero games like this. Mm-hmm. The true fantasy of what it would feel like to be a superhero. Both strengths and weaknesses, because, you know, he was not invincible in that game. You could easily die. But he was tough. So it really mastered that tough but not invincible thing, you know? Yeah. You were talking about that earlier.
Yeah, I was, like, making the balance of, like, having the power trip as Batman. Like, when you're encircled by a bunch of goons or whatever, and you, like, feeling like, yeah, they're not really, at the same time, like, I'm Batman, like, these aren't, like, I can take on 10 of these guys at once, but also, like, having, like, the challenge, you know, where, yeah, it's just not mindless, but impressive, like, you still could be overwhelmed, like, if you didn't master the fighting, right? Like, so it's a hard balance to have. Like, we were just watching, like, we were doing some research, and we were, like, watching footage of this licensed game based on the animated series, and it was like Batman is just fighting some goon and, like, just has to punch him like 10,000 times before, and it's like, okay, well, he's fighting just some nameless thug, like, that doesn't feel like Batman, right? Yeah.
so it gave you the power fantasy, but all, and then you would get more powerful with new gadgets. It was just really great. It even had a leveling up system. It had so much shit packed into that game.
I can think of, like, a couple of games during, like, the 360 era where that I kind of, like, associate with this time where I was just kind of, like, transported to another place while playing. I think of, like, Oblivion. I think of BioShock. Yep. I think of Mass Effect. I think of Dead Space as one.
Yeah.
And
completely agree.
I think of this game where I was just like somewhere else, like when I was playing it. Like the whole world around me melted away and I was just like in Arkham. Like,
and also you were in this mode of like constant awe. Like around every corner, in every way, you're just like, this is the joy of gaming, right? This is why I love video games so much. It's right here and it's right now. And I just want to play this and then play it and play it some more and see what's around the next corner. It's just so fun.
Yeah, I had my friend and roommate at the time. We were both playing the game and I was like, how are you liking so far? He was just like, Arkham, baby, I'm there. Like, he just like kept walking around the house saying that.
That's awesome. That sounds awesome. Sounds like a character. So, anything else to say about Arkham Asylum, or should we move to City?
Yeah, let's move to City.
So, City, I liked less when I played it than I liked Arkham Asylum. However, in retrospect, when I think about City and all the evolutions that it made to the formula, that game is just unbelievable. So, Arkham City, the conceit was that Arkham City has been boarded off because it's become this prison for all of the bad guys. So basically they took Arkham Asylum, this more discreet location, and they basically expanded it out to an entire city, but then
section of the city,
but then they closed that off. And then they said, now this is your new playground and it's much bigger. So what happened was we lost some of the intensity and the depth and the complexity of the interior environments. They still had them, but they weren't nearly as complex or dense or interesting inside. There were some that were okay, but nowhere near what Arkham Asylum brought you. However, for the trade-off, we got this amazing traversal around the city and this grapnel boost where you could shoot a grapnel and then hit A just at the right time. Learn a lesson, Gotham Knights. But anyway, you hit the A at just the right time and it shoots you off and you're flying and you're propelling through the air and then you're like grabbing another thing.
And then you can like dive bomb to gain more speed.
Glide. Yeah. Oh, it felt so good, the traversal in that. They really mastered like how to make Batman this.
Like you could start from one side of the city to the other, never hit the ground once. You know what
and
I mean?
There were challenges associated with that and trophies and things. But essentially what it basically became was like a scavenger hunt through Arkham City to meet and interact with all kinds of villains, both on the critical path and off the critical path, which I would argue you got to do everything. If you're going to play that game, you better do every side mission. You better find, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. The dude, who challenges you and says, are you a good enough protector of this city?
Oh, like Azazel or whatever? Azrael.
If you didn't say Azazel, I wouldn't have had it, so thank you. And like just all the different sections. There's so many great villains.
Like that's Mad the Hatter. One, you even go down into like the League of Shadows area, right? Yes. Like where the Lazarus Pit is and everything,
oh,
right?
Oh God, I forgot. I need to play Arkham City again. It's that good.
But I remember like you would go like, this is the area that Mr. Freeze is at. This is the area that Bane's at. This is the area where Poison Ivy is. Like all that stuff, right?
It was so cool.
And I loved how like this was like more like the animated series where like you would have like the regular villains and then you would have like, you know, like Batman sometimes does like has like almost like supernatural villains, like so Poison Ivy, Bane, Killer Croc, even Solomon Grundy, I think, was in this. You know, you have those sort of like borderline supernatural villains that are like seriously a threat to him. So yeah, it cranked it up to 11 and like brought in every. I think Clayface was in the game, right? Awesome. I mean, just once again, it was like everything that was great about Asylum was like crank it up to 11 and like bring like even more characters. Like the ventriloquist guy with the dummy and the Tommy gun. what was his name? Dr. Pig or whatever the guy that does
Professor
the surgery.
Pig.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, the game is so good. I mean, we could go on and on. Then there was an armored edition that came out for Wii U about a year later. And you know, it was on the gamepad and it had like some kind of like extra effects.
And he had like electrified
gauntlets
or whatever.
Yeah. And it was whatever. It was just more of the same.
It was like the Wii would like get like some definitive versions of games for its launch. You know,
they were trying to do something with the damn thing because they didn't know what they were doing. Then after Arkham City, an interesting thing happened. Rocksteady was back working on Arkham Knight, the trilogy capper, the final game in the trilogy, and in the meantime, another developer, Montreal,
WB Games Montreal,
WB Montreal, got to basically take that engine and make their version of an origin story. So it was essentially before all of this happened. Now, there are a lot of challenges with that. Like, how do you let Batman only acquire his items later, but then, like, give him all those items to start with? And to some extent, it's fine because, like, he already has them in Asylum, but, like, they're in his Batmobile and he's picking them up. So that's kind of
well,
okay.
Well, like, to your point, it's like he's getting... You want to make the game fresh and have new concepts, but it's like, then like, why did he never use that before?
Right. So the idea is it'd be one thing to just have him recollect all the stuff that was in his Batmobile in Asylum, but it's another thing to give him like more advanced tech, which they wanted to do. And they did. And they just said, F it and just did it, you know, and maybe he just stopped using that because it wasn't great. Who knows? But anyway, I remember really loving this game. It was different. It felt different. It felt rougher. It felt, it was all about Black Mask. Part of it. It just isn't as memorable. But the only thing I remember was I loved it. And then recently I rebought it.
Yeah. You talked about this before, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And tried to play it again. And I was starting to see that, like, it's not as good as I remember. It's good.
I think we were all riding high on it, just how awesome Arkham was during that time though.
But what you need to know about it is it was
kind of derided at the time, and like people, and it was sort of like this isn't Rocksteady, so screw it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and that was unfair.
It wasn't fair. It actually was a pretty, like, if Rocksteady is 100 out of 100, this game is like 82. You know what I mean? Like, it's still really good.
I love
how
you always come with like very weird numbers.
I mean, it's what I feel. You know,
it's an 86.3.
It's what I feel. But yeah, you're right. I do that. But I mean, It's I almost think like Rocksteady games are almost over 100, to be honest, because if 100 is like, anyway, never mind, stupid comment. But then a weird game called Arkham Origins Blackgate came out. And so this was actually, I believe Way Forward made this, if I'm not mistaken. It was either them or the other company that makes similar things, if you could check my math on that. But Arkham Origins Blackgate was a Vita and 3DS game. I played it on Vita, and essentially it was a true Metroidvania.
Developed by Armature Studio.
Oh, huh. Armature. Oh, you know what? Oh, I know what it was. Armature Studios is the company that made the Arkham City Armored Edition.
Okay.
And that was their tryout to make a full Arkham game. And then they ended up making this game. Okay. So it's a Metroidvania, and you literally, it was like 2D. I played the shit out of it and really enjoyed it. But to be honest, it was like hard to parse. Like, you looked at the map and you couldn't really figure out how the map related to the world you were in and stuff like that. So it's certainly not like an elegant game, but it's definitely a fun one. So if you're looking for like a good side-scrolling take on Arkham, this is certainly not like back in the day when they'd make a Game Boy tie-in and it was a piece of shit. It's better than that, but it's also not like amazing. So that's my take on that. You didn't play that one, right?
I never play this one, no.
So let's move on to Knight. So the trilogy capper. Arkham, so all this was happening with Origins. We're really waiting, coming off the high of Arkham City, for like the final Rocksteady game. And the word we get before it came out was, this game is going to have a full Batmobile, and you're going to be able to drive everywhere in the city all throughout with your Batmobile. And I was like, how the fuck are they going to do that? How is that possible? Damned if they didn't do it. It's a great game. There's some big things that took it down a notch. So it was definitely the most polished experience in some ways. It's definitely the biggest evolution of like the combat and like the Predator rooms, but a lot of it was built around this tank of
puzzling decision.
It's this tank of a Batmobile, and it's just like, sort of like the Tumbler, but more tankish, and it would turn into like this turreted tank, and there'd be all these missions where you're like shooting mines.
Way too many missions.
So much.
Like it was like, yeah, that would have been cool to do one to three times, but it's all over the game.
Other weird thing, and maybe they just thought it would be boring to do the same thing they did in City again, even though I don't think so. I'd have loved it, but ultimately, it essentially like they made a lot of the puzzles like vehicle puzzles.
Right.
So like you had to like use your winch and like pull yourself across gaps in the fucking tank.
Or like launch over gaps. And
it was weird,
but
man.
One of the things like I think that encapsulate when they just approached this wrong would be like, there's one like side quest or like activity around the world that like is like, there'll be like these other drones. Like the reason he has the Bat Tank is because the enemy the Arkham Knight, right, creates all these like drones around the city, like these vehicle drones, and then like Batman's using that to like, he's using the Batang to destroy the drones. So like, you would go to like a convoy. Forgot about the
paramilitary organization.
Yeah, you would go to like a convoy, like destroy the drones. Then you find out like that Deathstroke is like the one who's in charge of all that. So then you like go to like the final confrontation with Deathstroke, and like you, Batman like pulls him out of the vehicle at the end, and then it's just like that quest line is over. It's like, okay, so instead of like having a boss, a really epic boss fight against Deathstroke, you just made it that we just chase him around in a tank all game and then just like blow him up in the end. Never leaves the tank.
And then the other silly thing about the game was, and I won't spoil it if you haven't, don't know the answer, but essentially the Arkham Knight's identity, everybody knew who it was 3 years before the video game came out. 3 years before it came out, everyone was like, I know who that is, that's blah, blah, blah.
And they were like, no, it's going to surprise
you. And they literally said, it's not. Point blank. They did that thing that a lot of, you know, like Andrew Garfield did recently about No Way Home, where they were just like, nope, it's not. And then everyone was like, I don't know who it is then, because that's like exactly who it clearly is, right? And then, of course, it was exactly that person.
Yeah, I don't know what they...
I guess like, what else they, could
who
they do?
Who did they think they were fooling?
What else could they do, though?
But, like, why even do this idea?
I know. Why? Yeah, exactly. Why have a masked character that so clearly might as well take the mask off
they just one? They should have just called him who he was then. Yeah. Like, why create a new original character for the game and create, like, all this faint, all this mystery behind it only to make it the story we already know? Yeah.
Now, all of this sounds like doom and gloom for this game. Truth is, it's a really fun game.
It's a really good game that's just brought down by all these sort of things that really didn't need to be there, honestly.
And they had really good side characters. And one thing we haven't mentioned with any of this is, like, in a lot of these, you get to actually play as other characters. Like, there's Catwoman missions in City. Mm-hmm. In this game, there's, like, a whole Batgirl section. There's a lot of that.
You even got to play as the Joker, I think, in the first game or whatever. At like, some in point, challenge yeah. missions and stuff.
And then another thing that these games do that's really cool, too, we could talk forever, but is the Fear missions where they have, like... Mm-hmm. The Scarecrow and he's like trying to look at you, and you have to like hide, and if he sees you, his fear talks and trips you out, and
the Predator missions where it's more like you're sneaking around and finding ways to like mess with the enemies, like make them scared, like their heart rate, you're monitoring their heart rate, they're more scared, they're more jumpy, and you could like use that against them, like set up the explosive gel as like traps and like blow up walls on them and stuff. It was so cool, you know. But Arkham Knight isn't like bad, but yeah, it was just some design choices that I guess they felt like they needed to do to shake things up, but like ultimately just misguided with the like over relying on the Bat Tank and just not as clever as a story as I think they thought they were making.
Yeah, but it's super fun. And if you want to have a good time, it's a great game.
Cool ending, too.
And super polished. Like, it's really the most polished. I mean, City's pretty perfect, but it's damn polished. Other little point to make, in 2016, they came out with Return to Arkham, which essentially is a rebuild of Arkham Asylum and Arkham City on the Unreal Engine on PS4 or whatever. And Xbox, and then they've also bundled it now in with Arkham Knight, which didn't need an up-res because it was already on the new console. But anyway, so you can get those games that way if you want. In between there, weird side story, Batman Arkham, same universe, VR came out. I never played this because I didn't want to drop $20.
It was more of like a
2-hour experience. It was like a really short thing. But yeah, it was an investigation, and it was basically an excuse to like use Batman gadgets in VR. So it is what it is. People say it was pretty good for what it is, but pretty short.
What happened? Wasn't there something controversial about the story of that?
I don't remember.
You sure?
You look it up. I don't remember. I believe you.
I'll have to look it
up. I hope it doesn't like retcon and F up the entire Arkhamverse.
I feel like there. I'm thinking of what I'm thinking, but I don't want to say it and be totally wrong. Yeah, okay. It is kind of what I thought, that he's investigating the disappearance of Nightwing. And then, Nightwing was killed. So I didn't want to say it because I was like, that's kind of sacrilege that Nightwing would be killed. But
yeah, that's stupid. That's super stupid. I don't like that. But whatever, especially because it's Nightwing. So anyway, that brings us to modern day. And it's been a long damn time. Rocksteady has made zero games in the time since then. So since 2015, no games. So that is...
Well, Arkham VR.
Oh, so... yeah. Yes, but that, okay, so since 2016, no games.
Yep.
So that's 7 years between that and when Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is supposedly coming out in 2023 if it doesn't get delayed again. It probably won't. So Rocksteady, like, we don't know what the Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is going to be like. What we do know is that we just got Gotham Knights. On the last episode, you heard my initial take of it, and I'll be talking more about it as I play more. But essentially, it's very weird, the decisions that they've made. Like, why people are starving for more Arkham, and like Gotham Knights, at least at the very least, certainly isn't that. Now, granted, maybe Rocksteady just doesn't want to make that,
which I can understand.
Yeah, I get that they don't want to make Arkham 4, but like maybe Gotham Knights should have been Arkham 4. That's what I thought when I saw these announced. What I really thought was, and I'm really wrong, but what I really thought was Gotham Knights was like the follow-up to Arkham, and that, like, you know, Batman dies in like some epilogue to the Arkham series, or maybe some shit goes down and then Batman dies, and then these four people have to take up the mantle in the Arkhamverse. And I really thought that's what it was, and that was, you know, Rocksteady doesn't want to do any more in that universe, but WB Montreal can't be so picky, right? So they're doing it. And then Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, I didn't know if that was Arkham or not. Have we heard that it's definitely not, or is it actually possibly in the Arkhamverse?
Yeah, I mean, there's no word on it one way or the other, whether that's like the same Harley Quinn or the same Batman, right? So
yeah, I don't know what to make of it. But anyway, so essentially, the developer Rocksteady, who made all those great Arkham games, has this new Suicide Squad game, and we've seen trailers now, and you know, it looks like. It looks very action-oriented, and it doesn't look like... I can't imagine... It's co-op, and I can't imagine that I'm going to be like...
It's funny how much it's like paralleling Gotham Knights in a way.
Yeah, right? I know.
Like, you know, like all these different characters.
And I just can't imagine that... What is it? Deadshot,
King Shark, I guess, Harley,
like,
Quinn.
Can I be... I'm not going to be King Shark going to get Riddler trophies. You know what right. I mean?
Yeah, I don't think... I think, once again, how much exploration could there really be? Because it doesn't like fit the theme of this.
I know.
You know.
He's not. They're not detectives at all. What is Deathstroke gonna like? Go like solve AR puzzles? I mean, like, I don't think so.
He was cool in the Arkham games, like his segments.
Yes, really cool. Yeah. Really cool. So I don't really know what to make of that game. I know there's a lot of shooting in it, which is weird because they're more of a melee developer, except for the fucking tank, which everyone hates. And so I don't really know what they're going to make of that. I know that Gotham Knights has gotten a really bad reception, got fours and fives from a lot of different publications. Thank you. No, yeah, it's one of those things, man. But fans seem to like it more. I've so far liked it more, but like, it's certainly not like the heir apparent to those games, man. And we'll see what happens with Suicide Squad. So, you know, this may be a roller coaster story where things go way up and then they go way the fuck down and then maybe up again one day.
Yeah, I don't see like a lot of hype surrounding the Suicide Squad thing. I mean, it's the game they want to make. More power to them. But it's like, I haven't heard one person be like, I cannot wait for Suicide Squad.
I want to be excited real bad. I really want to, because Rocksteady, they have never missed.
Well,
even Urban. No, they haven't missed.
I mean, Arkham Knight is just...
They didn't miss. Arkham Knight is, you know...
But it's sort of like in that... It's like in that Mass Effect 3 realm where it's like, yeah, it's not a bad game, but it, like, you soured our taste a little bit. Like, you know what I mean? You didn't quit. You didn't 100% stick the landing.
It's true. You're not wrong. I hate to say it, but
wrong. And it's been 7 years, like you said, so it's not like they came back and, like, redeemed themselves, you know, quote unquote.
Arkham VR, bro. Just kidding. Totally not, right?
Nightwing's dead. Damn you.
I wonder if it's in the Arkhamverse Suicide Squad.
Because I remember the rumors were that they were going to make a Justice League game.
Yep.
And I guess they are, in a way.
Yeah.
No. Just not the one we wanted.
Yeah, it's the Justice League antagonist game.
I just don't get this premise either. It's like, once again, it's like F-list characters versus the Justice League.
I don't get it, man. And then, Suicide Squad's kind of big, but to be honest, both Suicide Squad movies were somewhat of a disappointment. The first one certainly was with everybody. I don't hate it as much as some people do, but it's certainly not like a tour de force. And then let's look at, you know, the more recent one. I think it sucks. Some people think it's really good.
Yeah, it's great.
Some people do. I think that it's a movie
about...
Do you
like Peacemaker?
I love Peacemaker.
Yeah, okay.
It's a movie about... The problem with that movie is it's a movie about villains, and there's not one villain in the whole fucking thing, except maybe kind of Peacemaker. It's like the whole thing is like, you know, what's the main character with the gun?
Bloodsport.
Bloodsport.
Yeah.
He's not a bad guy, you know?
Well, like, he's like the Deadshot of the first
he's
movie.
He's not even, though. He's like, you know... mean to his daughter because he doesn't want her to get into the life, right? He's a father figure to Ratcatcher. Like, the whole thing is like you know, a bonding warm and fuzzy session. Again, it's a whole nother day to talk about. I've made really strong cases to this point before, but I just, and like, even Harley, like, there she is killing dictators because they're evil instead of being an evil monster. Like, she,
but that was a pretty funny scene.
You know, sure, it was funny, but they're just not villains, man. It's just they're not villains.
That's not the point. It's like, I mean, they're villains. They're like,
supposed to be the villains who are forced to do good, but want to be villains.
But you can be a villain and not completely evil.
No, right? Absolutely not. But like, everything they do in that movie is like, oh, Waller wants us to do bad stuff. We're good-hearted. We're going to go against the grain and save the underdog. That's that movie. And that's perfectly fine. It just isn't Suicide Squad in my mind. So that's all. And I look at that movie, and I don't see a lot of villains in it. Polka Dot, man, he's not a villain.
Right. He's a psycho.
Right. He's got some bad shit going on, right? Peacemaker is a misguided villain, you know, but ultimately, once Peacemaker in the series sees the light, realizes what he's really up to, not a villain, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah.
Even at the beginning of Peacemaker, he's like taking care of the little butterfly. His instincts are, you know.
I don't think they're quite like,
I mean, heroes?
Even
no.
Even the Thunderbolts aren't really villains, like, to like evil effect. You know, like the analog of like Marvel, I would say. Like, yeah. I mean, if they're just all evil, then like, what's the point, right?
Well, right. They're supposed to be like sort of anti-heroes by the end, but in my mind, they start as like fucking good guys almost. Again, it's just my particular take on that movie, and I also find it very like emotionally manipulative. It's just like setting me up to like cry about fucked up shit when it happens. Like, I'm just like, oh, Polka Dot, great. You know, like, you get the whole story, you finally come to, like, really warm up to him, you understand his plight, and then, you know?
Yeah, but that's part of the comedy of it. That's the charm of it.
I get it. I just think and the Ratcatcher and Bloodsport thing, like, makes me want to die. And you know what?
She was Ratcatcher 2, though.
Right. For other people, it's the reason that movie works. Like, mm-hmm. I've talked to friends who are just like, oh, my God, that thing with Ratcatcher and Bloodsport, I was, like, crying. I loved it so much. And I'm just like, I want to die. I hate that. I think it's manipulative and shitty. But again, it's all opinion. And I, you know, overall, that didn't get the greatest reviews. It certainly didn't get really good box office.
But that was also like when like people weren't really consuming going to the theater, right? I mean, that game came out.
He got a bad shake. For sure, in terms of timing and stuff. A lot of movies did, and hopefully that won't be held against them. Anyway, Suicide Squad aside, neither of those movies were, like, you know, unmitigated successes. You know what I mean? None of them were just like,
but
oh, my God.
They're kind of like the Guardians, where they're like, now they're in, right?
Yes, you know? It's true. So I'll tell you what were unmitigated successes, both Deadpool movies. Now, that's an example of, like, fucking, like, smash hit.
There was a Deadpool game. Remember that one?
I do remember that game.
That was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. I also remember the Spider-Man games that were pretty cool, like Shattered Dimensions, mm-hmm. and the
Web
one...
of Shadows. And
Yeah. I always used to make fun of a friend of mine about the fact that, was it Web of Shadows? There was one that takes place in one fucking building. And like, the entire game is like, there's biomes, but they're like in one building. And I used to make fun of how it was one fucking building. But anyway, I forget which one that was. It was the one after Shattered Dimensions, I think. But anyway, well, I think that wraps it up. I mean, I think the future is bright for where they could take Batman games. Are they going to make more of them?
I don't think they're just
going
to.
Why aren't they doing it?
Yeah. I think is they're. I don't think no one is making throwaway games anymore. So it's like, you know, once they're going to treat the license with respect, like, you know, like Marvel right now is very strategic, like who they're collaborating with, what studios they're only looking to make quality games, you know, whether it's Insomniac, Spider-Man and Wolverine. And then you got the Midnight Sun stuff, and you got, you know, some other stuff, you know, like, there was a new, Marvel Ultimate Alliance that Nintendo did, you know, so they're being more strategic with that stuff. And then we got like Amy Hennig working on, you know, a Captain America game, which is cool. And I think the same thing is going on, you know, maybe to not to the same prolific output, but with WB, like there's not going to be the next Arkham Blackgate, right? It's just going to be when the time is right, there'll be a new AAA Batman game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be in the works. Somebody's working on it. They have to be. Because otherwise, I mean, especially with the Matt Reeves verse, the newest news about the Matt Reeves.
Yeah, it's just a question of who would make it. Because yeah. WB has its own, like, internal development. So, and if Montreal is doing it, do we even want them to do it? But after, I mean, Gotham Knights looks
probably
okay.
Probably not.
And then Rocksteady, you know, understandably probably wants to do something.
I mean,
new,
imagine they spent 12 years making that same game,
it's
basically.
Just who would make it is the question.
It definitely is. Well, that will have to be a question for a future episode. But in the meantime, if you want to reach us, you can reach us on Twitter at The Joy of Game. You can email us at thejoyofgamingpodcast@gmail.com. We will be back next week with the news and Brandon's physical media picks and Rich's digital picks and what we've been playing, as we always do every other week. In the meantime, my name is Rich Lepore.
I'm Brandon Brino.
We'll see you soon.
Bye, guys.